First is, I like a martini. Two at the most. Three, I'm under the table. Four, I'm under my host. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Under My Host. I'm Corey. Today, producers Tyler and producer Porter
are here.
Our guest hosts are Sam Cruz of Against the Grain Brewery in Louisville, Kentucky.
Hi.
And Drew Fox of 18th Street Brewery in Gary, Indiana. Our guest today is Tommy Arthur of... Now, I've only ever bought Lost Abbey, and I know that there's also... I'm totally blanking. I've never had the port.
Right. So we always tell people that we're Port Brewing and the Lost Abbey. So sometimes it's just Brewing Beer, and the other times it's just the Lost Abbey beer.
So I don't know if we... So, and then maybe you can explain that, because I don't know if I've seen port here. I'm a fan of Lost Abbey, and I've been drinking it for a long time. So I couldn't find on the website. I just saw the Lost Abbey stuff. So maybe you can explain that to us.
We definitely produce two brands of beer here at the brewery. One is Port Brewing, mostly West Coast style beers. Mm-hmm. What you would more expect to find in bars and sort of pubs and things. And then the Lost Abbey line of beers is sort of what we call Belgian inspired. Every place that we send beer to gets both sets of beers, although some tend to sell more of some kind of beers than others. So it can be difficult to find one or the other depending upon the territory you're living in.
Gotcha. Well, we're drinking today a bunch of Lost Abbey.
Yes.
Just so that you know, I don't know what the guys have got going on, but we're drinking Red Barn Ale. So before we start talking about the brewery, will you just tell everybody a little bit about the beer before we start talking about how you got into brewing?
Sure. I'm a huge fan of farmhouse style beers. Mm-hmm. And Red Barn is one of our 6 year-round beers on the Lost Abbey side. It's a spiced saison, so it's got ginger, orange peel, black pepper, and grains of paradise in it. It's about 6.5% to 7% alcohol. Just a bursting sort of beer. It's really, really expressive as a spiced beer, and we love it. And it's one of our better-selling core beers, and just makes for a great food beer. And if you're not eating with it, it's great on its own, just as a drinking beer.
It is good. This is actually the first. I mean, yeah. I'm a big Lost and Found junkie. I think like the guys like I'll buy the growlers of it. But yeah, this is the first time I've had it, and it is good.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
So let's talk. Everybody, you have a cult following. I've always seen there's just a few bottles. We're in Atlanta, there's not a huge presence here, but we're so far from where you guys are in San Diego, or you guys. On some places it says San Diego, and then in other places you're listed as being under another city. Is just San Diego just more familiar to people, or?
So San Marcos is actually the city that we're in. It's in the county of San Diego.
Okay.
But basically we're in the county of San Diego, and we still are considered part of the San Diego brewing scene, much as Stone is in Escondido, which is one city to our south, and they're still part of the San Diego brewing scene. The county of San Diego is huge in terms of just scope and size. Mm-hmm. I think we'd be 3 eastern states at that point, but there's 80 operating plus breweries in the county of San Diego.
Wow.
And collectively some of the most amazing beer that we know of comes out of the county, but the city proper, it's a totally different argument.
Oh, so are you guys the big hitters in San Marco?
We are the largest of the 4 breweries in San Marcos, and we're one of the largest breweries in North County, which is sort of the way that the designation breaks down. Stone's about 3 miles away from us, and of course they're the largest brewer in San Diego County. We're about the 5th or 6th largest brewer in San Diego County out of the 80 plus breweries.
Very cool. So do you guys, I'm sure Sam and Drew, you both have experience with port brewing or with Lost Abbey, right? You guys wanted to talk to Tommy. So are you, what are your favorite Lost Abbey beers?
I would say mine is Red Poppy. I really like that. I had it for the first time, God, probably four years ago, I would say, at Phobab up in Chicago. Yep. And that beer actually triggered I was with a different brewery at this time. I didn't have my own. Myself and Jerry were there. We had that. But that beer triggered our interest in producing sour beer. So
was that the year we won Best Beer with that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. That yep. that beer yep. was so good. I had a question. You know, mm-hmm. it seems like you guys have been at this for quite a while. You know, out in California, when did this pick up? When did the sour beer create? You know, how did you guys get people to do that? Because we're right. still, you know, we're still trying to get everyone on board.
Well, let's start. We'll say that Tommy got into brewing in 95.
1995, 96. Uh-huh.
Right, and was an assistant brewer at a now like defunct or closed brewery. Was it La Cruda?
Yes, it was called Cervecería La Cruda, mm-hmm. which is in Spanish for the Hangover Brewery.
Sounds like a place that you would hang out, Sam.
Yeah, that's a wicked good name. Yeah, wicked good name we used to call it. So.
Well, Lost Abbey's been around and Port Brewing's been around since 2006. So, have you uh-huh. been? Did you have a sour program all along? Was this something that you loved before, or you stumbled on? You know, when you started this brewery?
So I left Cervecería La Cruda in May of 1997 mm-hmm. and ended up at the Pizza Fort in Solana Beach at that point, and spent a few years sort of getting my feet sort of anchored and wet there. And in late 90s, so 98, 99, we were given some barrels and for the first time pitched some Brettanomyces into the barrels. And that's where our cuvee was basically my first foray into sour beer or wild beer production. And at that very same time, Vinny up at Russian River was doing this stuff with Temptation. And sort of that was sort of, you know, upper bookends, you know, Northern California, Southern California. Mm-hmm. Some of the very first Brett-based beers in you know, on the West Coast that we knew of. And then, of course, we'd ran into Peter Brukart from New Belgium. And they just sort of gotten La Folie off the ground. And so collectively, we all started having conversations about experiences and trying to pick Peter's brain and learn about how Rodenbach was made and just the blending processes. And that's where it came from. So we took that information and some of the things that we'd learned at the pub level. And I left the Pizza Port in 2005, in the fall of 2005. And we opened our doors here in the early summer of 2006. And when we did that, we added 100 oak barrels to the mix out here and knew that things like Red Poppy and other sour beers were going to be made on a yearly basis. And that's kind of how we got into it. So we've been really working hard at the sour beer program for the last 8 years, but dipped our toe in the water in the late 90s for sure.
Very cool. Drew, what's your favorite Lost Abbey or Port Brewing beer?
I'm a big fan of Red Poppy as well. It was one of the beers that I was turned on to at a tasting at a local brewer house in Chicago, and they had a line of Lost Abbey beers, and it's just, as Sam said, it's a phenomenal beer that really just piques your interest into the sour world because, you know, again, there's so many sours out there that are produced. Some are produced well, some are produced horribly. You know, my question is really, like, how do you guys, is there a blending process? You guys pick the best, you know, batch and blend them to what you guys want, or is it just one batch and you guys are comfortable with that batch of beer, such as Red Poppy, or you guys blend multiple batches together?
So we are, specific to most of the sour beer, we start with sort of a premise or a target, which is, you know, what we think we have. And so if we filled, let's say in the case of Red Poppy, we may have filled 60 barrels last year, and Red Poppy takes 12 months in the oak barrel to become available. You know, we might know going into it that 50 barrels would be, you know, an ideal use, and we weren't going to use some and reserve some. But what we never do is we never blend to a distributor level. So we never open it up to the distributors and say, how many cases of this could you sell, and then try to fulfill to that number. What we try to do is say, look, we started with 60. How many of the 60 do we think are incredibly, you know, incredibly perfect and sort of what we call well-founded? And then beyond that, how many more can we add to that without devaluing the mix? So we always blend to taste or to suit. And that's what we call for the sour stuff is that we never start with a case total in mind, you know, that we have to get to. We always start with a flavor perspective and work backwards and say, how much can we get out of those original barrels that we filled, you know, in order to make this release relevant?
Well, that's cool, man. Very cool.
Yeah. It also means that we end up sitting on a lot of beer or creating a lot of orphans on barrels that didn't make the cut. But it's part of the premise of doing these kinds of things is you just cannot fill 60 and use 60 straight up. They just don't behave that well.
That's like, I guess it follows the red poppy, which I don't know. I've never seen it in Georgia. I wonder if it's just because of the limited production that we just don't get it here. If I just missed it,
you might see on a state level like 10 pixels in 30 cases total.
Keep your eyes open. Look for it. I guess I could just keep hounding Adam. let us know when it's being released. And that's part of the non-denominational series. So like when you guys, even though it's not even like a year-round or seasonal, you release it when it's ready to be released. So
yeah, we have a calendar that we try to stick to, which is that Red Poppy tries to be ready for February and March every year.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some other beers that are on that calendar, but then there's other things that just do not belong to the calendar, and they're ready when they're ready, or when we figure it out, we do. But there's a couple of things that we work really hard to stay in spec on to be a little bit more predictable with, and then outside of that, if we had 12 beers per year that were part of that program, 6 might be heavily programmed or try to be, on spec, and then the other 6 might float for whatever time they want to float to.
Very cool. So did you guys have any more questions before we move on?
Yeah, what's the process you guys go through to choose your oak barrels? I know you said you guys use new oak barrels. Is there a specific char process you guys look for as far as consistency? And are those specs spot on all the time usually?
So we basically have what we call two different styles of barrels that we're looking for here at the brewery. The one is the spirited barrels, and so that involves bourbons and brandies. We've bought rum recently. We bought tequila barrels, even had cognac at one point. And then we have the non-spirited side, which is more to the red wine and the sour beer program. With respect to the spirited side, the bulk of it is bourbon and brandy. Almost all of those barrels are first fill, meaning that we only use them one time, and then we turn them and burn them and send them out. And as the bourbon and brandy goes, we're working with Tom Griffin, who is sort of very famous in the Midwest for his acquisition skills, and he buys a lot of barrels from Evan Williams, which is a great distillery, and those barrels are anywhere from 5 to 10 years old in terms of the liquid that was previously in them. So we're sourcing really nice bourbon and then the brandy that goes along with what they were producing, and that's something we've been really committed to, is making sure that the liquid on the spirited side is very good on the way in. When it comes to the red wine casks, we're less interested or concerned with necessarily the provenance of the wine or the winery that had the liquid to begin with, and we're more concerned about buying neutral oak and just really working to get barrels that are good for the long haul.
Yeah, Tom's a great guy. He helped us with some stuff as well, so he's a good guy.
Yeah, beyond being a nut job, he's a good guy.
Aren't we all?
Well, he showered naked for the brewery a couple times, so, and that was during business hours, so, not much you can do about that.
I've got a question off of that, the spirited barrels, because it's something we've noticed. We get bourbon barrels, so they're coming out of our ass. There's so many.
Because you're in Louisville. You're the only people with bourbon barrels coming out of your ass. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We can
help you release some of that out of your ass, okay?
what I want to know is, we've had this experience with older whiskeys, not 10 years, but we'll get it old. Yeah. I don't like those barrels as much as I do the like you said, 5 to 10 year range. Mm-hmm. I actually like 5 better.
Sure.
Do you get that? Do you get the same
thing? It's funny, I wondered
if it was just us.
No, I think when we first got into this, we were getting older barrels. I think Tom was stating, hey, everything's got to be 10 years plus, and I think it's kind of slid down to 5 years. And, and the range from 5 to 10 is quite variable. I like the texture of the beer we're getting, and I like the vanillins and the vanillin, and I love the vanilla character and the oak and things. There is definitely something to be said for how unpredictable the barrel can be at 5 years versus 12, and certainly 18 is no better. It's interesting. The goal is to make a great flavored, beer and to have that whiskey character, And maybe somewhere between 5 and 10 years, you know, you start to extract things at 10 years in the, out of the oak that you don't want and would have been better at 5. And but certainly at 3 years, they're not as good as they are at 5. And I think that maybe we're finding that that mid-range is really important, but it's hard to prove it unless you have a, just an enormous amount of barrels going on.
That's yeah, it's just been kind of an inkling of an idea that we've gotten out of it. It's been, you know, we're getting a range of old all the way to, you know, 3 years. And yeah, it is that just mid age that we're so happy with. So
now what's the distillery so
we're turning away on this stuff? Off the record.
Yeah, off the record on the show. Yeah, but you guys list who you're getting your barrels from, don't you?
We do, but we don't have a backroom agreement, so
we get them from Four Roses. We get them from
Pappy, Angels Envy.
We get Pappy, we get Angels Envy, we get but you know, really anything coming out of Buffalo Trace.
Okay.
It could be Weller, you know. We don't do many Brown Foreman. Their cooperage doesn't have any, and we don't mess around with the third party. It's straight from the distiller.
Yeah. I'm curious when you speak of the Four Roses stuff with the different washes and stuff they've got going on. Are you guys using all the different sort of blends and things, or are you getting a specific? Are you getting the weeded one? Or are you getting the corn one? Or
Yeah, we get them all because when we buy them, we have to buy like all of them. Mm-hmm. We don't get to buy 10. You know, we got to buy.
So it doesn't. Are you getting the range of things that they're dumping? So it's not just specific to a corn one this week or a wheat one the next.
No, yeah, it's everything, and we don't. We have their codes to do the tracking on those.
Yeah,
and has found there's you know. There's distinct differences for the beers that we're brewing. You know, we're not
sure.
We're doing pretty bourbon forward beers in some cases, but or some really big hitters. But there are distinct differences, and it's hard to say. It's just I like them younger.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, okay, no comment. It's interesting because that's such a unique distillation process or blending process that's going on. So the fact that you're using them is very curious, you know, not curious to me, but curious in the sense that, you know, the differences you're associating with regard to, you know, age references and things like that, you know, and contact in the time in the barrel. Most people don't have that much experience with Four Roses in that many different environments. So it's appealing just to talk about it.
I wonder though if that's the difference, you know, because I haven't had, you know, we're going to have your barrel aged, your most recent release soon today, but I've not had it before. And I always say that about Sam's beers, you guys do barrel aging so well. And I wonder if it's the same thing like with the Lost Abbey. You guys are, it's so restrained. It, you know, it's like you're drinking, you get the booze in the beer, but it's not overwhelming. And I think that's, and I love whiskey, but if I drink beer, I want to drink beer. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to trying Tommy's, but I would say, I wonder if that's what it is that you guys are doing. The fact that you're not like these like overly saturated old barrels.
I think we're maybe both looking for character from the wood.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
everything. Tyler's got to make that dirty.
I can't help but giggle. Sorry. Character from the wood is just funny to me.
We're trying to get there was a problem with, did you get it out?
We had a cork malfunction.
Cork busted on the Lost Abbey, so we're just trying to waste time. So we got it. Okay.
I totally would have left the wood comment out if not for that, by the way. Totally would.
Oh, that's the problem. So we're drinking. I want to talk about Lost Abbey is really my favorite, I think, of I say Lost and Found is my favorite Lost Abbey. So I would love to hear just a little bit about.
So I love Lost and Found. It's a beer I rarely drink, but
really?
I love it. Well, no, you got to understand, we make 50 touches beers per year. I think Lost and Found is one of the most underrated beers that we produce. That style of beer is incredibly difficult to make well.
Yes.
And I think that we have nailed the qualities of that beer without fail. And it's an awesome beer when we do beer dinners and just end up in places where it's being paired. It is something I'm very proud of, but at the same time, there's so many other beers that I want to drink. You know, it's a simple, you know, there's only so many beers in a day.
You poor thing. All those Lost Abbey beers to choose from. Where do you start?
I know, right? Where do you start? Yeah. So typically when I run into Lost and Found, it's out on the road somewhere and it's as part of a promo, whether it's a bar night or, a tasting and there's a on the menu. But we haven't tweaked that recipe since we opened our doors here. That recipe has not moved in 8 years. It is brewed the same way that it was when we opened our doors 8 years ago, and I'm really proud of the flavors that it has because we sort of owned it from the day one, and it is a spectacularly put together double. And I hate raisins, but there's raisins in the beer.
Which is really funny. I wonder what made you do. And we tried another beer, and we did a show, and there's a beer with raisins, and Porter's like, "It's got raisins," and I was like, "You already love a beer that has raisins in it. Shut up and drink it first."
There's just so many beers I've had that have raisins in them. They're just not good.
Yeah, but this. Well, it is funny for the brewer that to like, what made you put an ingredient in that you hate? I'm really curious.
I was told it would work really well,
and it did. And it's, yeah. I love how carbonated, it's like, it's not heavy at all.
No,
you think by reading the description, it's really heavy. It's not. And it's real effervescent and I love it. I really, really love this beer. It's one of the few things I ever buy in a growler because I know it'll get finished.
On the drive home.
The challenge of making a really good Abbey double, or, you know, that's 8.5% is that fine line between too heavy of a handed, you know, caramel and sweet and cloying. And the levity that comes from some spices and yeast flavor, and I guess we've really got it dialed in, and I think it's a great beer for that reason. But you know, you're not going to see me standing at the end of the bar drinking one every Friday night. But I do appreciate it for what it is.
Well, it's good.
I love the fact that you buy it by the growler because that's just unheard of.
there's a place here. I can't, of course, like name them on there, but there's a place that does. They don't have a ton. I mean, they have so much, but of course, they don't have so much of one particular brewery. But that's where I go. That's where I go when I want to get some. I want to ask you. So my friend Brian, who's a brewer at Three Sheeps in Sheboygan, sent in. He was hoping to get you to talk about Brett strains and the flavor evolution that the bottled beers go through.
Yep. Is there a better question than that, or that's just what he wants to know?
That's what he wants. Is that not a good question? He's really...
Well, it depends what you're talking to.
You are one of those people. There's two people. I've got another guest coming up where this was like between the sours and the Brett's. Brett has been consistently brought up, I think, in almost every brewer show that we've done.
Yes,
like
literally.
The past like several months.
Yep.
So people are, and it's weird because this is like, it's not a new thing, but people, maybe it's just these newer brewers that are wanting to experiment and learn more about it. And you're one of the people that they definitely look to for that. So yeah, that's all we got. That's the best question I got from him. So if
you want to. All right. So I'll answer it as simple as we can answer it. We are now operating under three different ways that Brett gets used at the brewery. Mm-hmm. We have Brett that's used in the barrel formatting. So that's lots of sour cultures and things like poppy and framboise and otherwise where Brett is a part of that. We have some Brett beers that we produce, Carnival, our Gift of the Magi, our Ten Commandments, where the beer, after fermentation, primary fermentation, spends some time on the Brett in the tank before we go to package. And then because all of our beer is naturally carbonated and re-fermented in the bottle, we add yeast at the bottling. Sometimes there's a few beers that we do where the bulk of the re-fermentation that's done. Hold on.
Feed the baby.
So the bulk of the re-fermentation that's done in the bottle is done with Brettanomyces, and we alter the cocktail of yeast that we use for re-fermentation, and that gives us a different texture. Hey, you.
It's all right. We're short of guest host anyway.
So there's three different ways that we use right here in the brewery. And that doesn't include the 100% all Brett beers. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we're not doing a lot of that. So it's really just about how Brett is involved in the re-fermentation of the bottles and things like that.
And I, you know, it's like, I love all of the different beers that we don't get, especially some of the seasonal. They all sound so good and I would like them all. The Ten Commandments is one that he brought up that sounds so good that I've not had before. The Saison Blanc, would like to try that.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Yeah, you have quite
a few. Nice.
Yeah, well, just have, well, again, I'm like, we'll just have to like start hounding, but I you guys are really, baby needs beer.
Baby needs food.
Do you guys, so before we, you know, I want to talk about things maybe that are beer related, but just off topic. Do you guys want to ask any other questions about the brewery?
I did actually. Yeah, I wanted to go back to port. Really, I think the concept that you have the Lost Abbey and then port, the mm-hmm. working man's brewery, I guess, is really cool. In fact, that's something that we've looked at kind of working towards because. You know, here in Kentucky, I don't know. It's strange. Things are very new. You know.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, we could have this very tamed version of our brand, and then also have the export version, which is really part of who we are as well. You know. So I was wondering when did it come about that you guys decided to do that.
So I think when we decided to open the doors out here, it was about 8 years ago, of course. But in that context, we knew that the Abbey brand was something we really it didn't exist, and we wanted to build it. But in order to build it, we had to have the ability to be open. And in order to be open, we had to have basically have things that could pay the bills. And the bills, you know, were dollar based. So doing the two together made sense. There's a lot of wineries in California that. There's a lot of wineries in California that have multiple labels, and they use those different levels of cost and things to pay the bills, and it just seemed natural to us, even though it's not really intuitive in the beer business.
No, it is an intuitive, but it's definitely very cool and very, very innovative, I think. A bifurcated brand is what we call it.
Sam, have you had...
Especially with the way the business has gone, right, where everybody wants to have things that are not on tap all the time, and it really has worked out well.
Nice.
And I've Sam, so you've had the port brewing, you've had some bottles, or is it just distributed where you guys are?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
They're not in Kentucky, not that I know of, anyways. If it is, it's northern Kentucky, away from us. But we have access to them because we're so close to Indiana, and you know my home away from home is Chicago, so you always get Lost Abbey beers in Chicago.
That's right, Chicago.
So they're
thank God,
very very good stuff. Very 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 good stuff, man.
So, Tommy, I wanted to ask you, and not for this to be a long conversation, but so we've been talking a lot with brewers about water and what's going on with the water situation. Are you guys being affected with your water source?
Well, we're as far away from the Northern California stuff as you can be.
Mm-hmm.
But we get all of our water brought in. We don't really supply hardly any of our own water here.
Okay.
So some of it comes from the Colorado River to the east, so Arizona and Arizona and sort of Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of it comes from Northern California. And because it comes from Northern California, of course, there's concern about the snowpack and things.
Right.
But we really aren't we're not as beholden to the groundwater as sort of some of those guys up north. And I imagine that they're going to have more issues than we are, but it's something on our radar.
Yeah, it definitely, of course, brewing is really important. It seems like just really scary if you live out there and you need to drink water. it could be a bit of a problem, but yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about cellaring and your beers, because a lot of the stuff that we would get, the Lost Abbey, with the exception of, you've got one hop forward label in in the series. What do you recommend for cellaring? And do you recommend, I'm assuming I would have loved to have been able to hold on to the Deliverance. I actually saw some here in town, so I may have to get some more and hold on to it for a couple of years. But what is your take on cellaring?
So most of our standard and seasonal beers we really feel have, you know, anywhere from 6 months to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then things like Deliverance could clearly go 15, 20 years if everything went in the favor. But it's a range. Depends on whether it was barrel aged or not. Most of our Abbey beers, with the exception of Devotion, we have no problem with 6 to 9 months and even further.
Wow.
Yeah, I think I want to pick some up and just to see, because you know and I'm not sure you know how it works like wine does, but I guess it has a pretty high alcohol. It's 12.5%. Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what that does after a couple of years. Do you? I'm not really ready to open that yet. I'm still drinking my beer and I want to enjoy it. So I guess you know. I guess some of the other questions that we'll just ask before we're good on time, right?
Yeah.
When you're in an area with such great beer, and I'm sure you're very busy drinking because you guys produce so much beer. But when you're not, what beers do you enjoy? Do you tend to drink local beer from other San Diego brewers, or do you have a favorite brewery that inspires you to create new things, or are you just drinking your own beer?
Well, I try to only drink our own beer when we're in town, but I travel a lot. In fact, I'm leaving for Seattle tomorrow, so you know, my job when I'm on the road is to make sure that we're aware of what's going on outside of here. So a lot of when I'm on the road drinking involves as best I can things that we might do that somebody else is doing in the market, or just looking at stuff. I have never treated a beer in a market with respect to who made it and you know, how much it affects what we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's always really just about wanting to be aware of what's going on around. And so, you know, if I went to someplace tomorrow and there was, you know, four great beers from Firestone, I'd drink all four of them. You know, if I'd never run into them before, I'd want to know why it was that they released them. You know, if I was in Georgia, I'd want to understand what Sweetwater was doing or some of the smaller breweries. But I just would be drinking regionally, locally, or otherwise as a matter of course. But of course, it would have to be good. And so I would ask the bartender, you know, first and foremost, you know, it's on tap, but is it any good, or is it pouring? You know, is it worth drinking? And a lot of times you'd be interested to see that it's on tap, but the bartender's not drinking it and they've got other recommendations.
Now, they are my friends and they are on the show, and it's not just because they're sitting here, but they're on the show because I respect what they do. But if you ever do see 18th Street or Against the Grain somewhere, you really should try it. The guys do some pretty amazing stuff, too.
Awesome beer. Yep. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Agreed.
I'm quite certain now that I've been on the show and we've had the conversations that next time I do run into it, that's an absolute... Cool. I think it's really important. You want to... It's a pesto good on the mark to try. Yeah. I can tell you there's so many new breweries everywhere that I can't even try all the new ones in San Diego. So
yeah. Trust me, it's hard to even talk to. There's so much opening right now, but yeah, there's a lot of good and there's a handful of great.
We might have beer out there where you are.
Really?
Oddly enough, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Only bottles, though, at the moment. Only bottles.
Okay.
So we're not very big, but we travel far.
And the names are awesome and stand out. So
yes.
We know that. All right, so we'll look for it.
I just want you to see the label.
Yeah.
I have a feeling he's a very nice man. Your labels might. I love your labels, but they might scare him a little bit.
That label's got like angels pulling people out of.
Okay, well, that's what I was going to ask about. I don't know if it's a touchy subject or not. Hopefully, it's not. We are not. This doesn't bother me, but I thought it was really strange, and I remember back a year or two ago that like. The Wiccan people were like up in arms about, and there's still, I checked to see if it was still up, but that there's actually a page. Now, nobody, of course, that loves beer is caring about this, but there were people that were very upset and wanted the brewery boycotted because they felt like there was an image of a woman at the stake. And, you know, I mean, it's history. I mean, it was just such a weird like, I don't ever come down on people, but has that died down for you? Like, that was just kind of strange.
Persecution.
Yeah.
Well, we were done with it. We were done with it right until you brought it up. So it's
nobody that listens to the show is worried about it. We're all sinners going to hell on this show.
That is the premise for sinners first and saints alike. But, you know, the craziest thing is that we created a label that we felt was very high in storytelling capability, and it's certainly, you know, burning a woman at the stake is not exactly ideal. It's a very polarizing and charged image, but it does what it's supposed to do, which is it talks about the history, it talks about the story, and we got a lot of flack for it. But at the same time, we were also, you know, trying to explain to people why it is that art can be art can do that, and it's, you know, that's the original piece of art that we created. So, you know, we're not going to shy away from that kind of stuff.
Well, no, and it's good. I'm glad you did. So, did you not change? Right, you didn't change anything after they. No.
You know, Ghostbusters, not afraid of a little ghost.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. I just thought, wow, that's pretty weird, and wow, it's still up. They must really carry a grudge. But
I will always support the artist before everything else. So,
which is great. Yeah. You would think that they would want, you know, like you say, it is a story. It's definitely part of history. It's not like you took a woman outside who was, I don't know, whoring it up or something and set her on fire. I'm not sure what.
Or did you?
Exactly. So let's talk. Well, we need to talk about, there are a few of your beers that I would really like to talk about. And I know you guys with the Cuvée de Tommy, you're changing the fermentation or the re-fermentation, you know, and I've not seen it here. So, of course, just reading about it, or, you know, it coming up in the news, if anybody had a question about that, I think, are you guys just like working out the kinks on, I'm not really sure what was going on. I've not had.
So
I've
why
not
had when it. We're out. Yep.
Yeah.
So we've been making Cuvée for a long time, or at least I've been making it since 1999. Mm-hmm. And what we've come to learn is that over the years, we're making it stronger, more acidic, and more difficult and problematic than we've ever made it. And so, of all the sour beers that we produce here at the brewery, Cuvée is the hardest one to get to re-ferment in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the press release, and that's why the words and all those things came out. We've gotten a lot of our processes under control, and Cuvée remains this enormous sort of problem child. And it's okay that it is, because the flavor we're making is incredible. But if you want to balance the consumerism with the sort of want from the brewery, we'd like it to have a little bit more spritz and a little bit more texture from that. But it's really difficult, you know, at 13% alcohol to get to that and that level of pH and all that stuff. So, you know, we wanted to come out this year and just tell people why we keep struggling with it, or at least why it's not as simple as it seems. And it's not an easy beer to make. It's not an easy beer in the bottle to make that happen and to do that. And, you know, at some point you have to just stand up and say, look, it's a work in progress, and we're going to get there, and we're going to learn a lot about it along the way. And we are. But it's going to take years. It's not a 1 year thing. And, while they might like it to be that, you know, tomorrow, we're constantly diving into it and learning how hard it is to do this.
And how long, I mean, is that's part of the non-denominational series, isn't it? So how, I mean, right. So from the time you produce it and when it's time to pop the cork, how long is that?
We're probably looking about 15 months from the time it hits the barrel. Wow.
So you just, I mean, it's just a waiting game. You just have to wait and see what, I don't have, again, it's one of those things with craft. I mean, it is, you guys are, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I would imagine it's just not as bubbly. I'm not sure, like, with the taste.
There's so much red wine character in the beer these days, and there's so much of the flavor perspective that really brings, you know, oak and tannins and red wine and acidity and stuff, that we're really not living in Champagne land. We're not looking for it to be spritzy, but at the same time, we understand that there is a spot in there where the consumer is looking for something, and we are basically trying to frame those conversations, which is, it's really hard to get to that level the way we do things, and we would love to get there someday, but we can't without working harder at this. And right now, there's a lot of work that's left to be done.
Well, I definitely would like to taste your hard work at some point. Yeah. I think it's great that you guys are addressing it and telling people. And, you know, like anybody who makes anything, like your products constantly evolve.
Right.
So,
right. Interesting.
I think the answer is the work in progress. And thank you for saying that, because it is such a pain in the ass for people to ride, you know, you to be ridden or any brewer, I think, when you explain to them, hey, this is something that is so unique and so untested and new, and
right,
you know, give me a chance to develop it. You know, perfection doesn't happen overnight. It takes time.
Well, and that's what happened for us is that we've been making cuvée for a very long time, and we needed to come out and tell people that over the years we've learned that this is a very challenging beer to do, even though you keep expecting it to be very simple, or you know, you at least expect it to be the same every year.
And
we're not able to do that right now. We're certainly trying, but it's not the same thing. It's not as simple as making an IPA every 2 weeks, and we need people to understand that.
I think the public too, that it's not as simple as making an IPA every 2 weeks. I think the public too, there's so much need, at least from what I see, great beers, great lambics, great sours. I think that need is there. Again, people have to be patient, and some people don't understand that. But I think when you get out in front of it and you explain it to them, you'll have that vast majority of people say, hey, you know what, they're doing this shit right. They're not trying to rush the beer for the sake of making a dollar. But that's hugely important, and we see it. We see it every day. We see it every single day when people put out, whether it be a piece of design, they call it sour, it tastes like shit, but they don't get it. They let it roll, you know, so... But I agree. Yeah,
I gotta
get in front of it.
Well, you guys ready to drink the Deliverance?
Yes.
Have you guys, Sam and Drew, have you had a chance to have Deliverance before? I think this bottling just came out. Did you have the current year, Sam?
I have to look at the label and see. I'm Googling it right now.
So. Tommy, didn't it just come out?
Yep, we're on basically the most recent batch of it, or most recent vintages are right about now.
And again, like, how long does it take you from start to this hitting the shelves? What's the time frame?
It's got two beers in it, and neither one of them is less than 12 months to 15 months old. So.
Wow. Right. And you blend the two. Is it an equal? Yeah. I mean, is it just about half and half?
It's close. I mean, it's probably lives within 60-40 either side, depending upon what we feel works each year. You know, this one might have been 55-45 or 57-43, but they live within a 60-40 range. In some years, there can be more barley wine and less imperial stout.
I love barley wine.
This one seems to have a little bit more of the imperial stout character going on. So,
I smell the barley wine. Well, I smell the booze. I love barley wine, and I don't get to drink nearly enough of it.
Just a quick question: how many barrels are you producing per batch of things like that?
So this is one of our larger barrel beers that we do, and because of the blend, we're almost at 100 oak barrels collected. So we have 60 of one, you know, or 40 of the other, or you know, vice versa.
Right.
But we would have 100 on site that we would be working with.
Wow. Okay.
I definitely taste the brandy.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it's really good.
Very good.
And again, that's one of the largest oak barrel beers that we make in terms of cases. We did 2,000 cases this year, plus some six stools.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but it's not when you get back down to it. I mean, 100 oak barrels is not a tremendous amount of beer when you really look at it.
Wow. That's a drop in the ocean for beers, but much bigger than what we're doing, I can tell you that.
Yes. We produced about 15,000 barrels of beer total last year. So when you think about that with respect to our oak program, we're about only 10% of our total beers going through the oak side of things.
This is Deliverance. I'm so jealous. This is the one I want to get into.
Do you not have any there? I might be able to.
No, we don't have that here.
I can actually get something that Sam can't get. I feel I don't know. I just feel.
Special.
Exactly. Now, so just a couple. I would love to hear about just the few beers that I would really like to have that I don't ever see here, like the Ten Commandments. I mean, first of all, I want to know, like, how are you blackening those raisins? There's rosemary and honey. I need that beer.
The Ten Commandments?
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
So we probably should put that recipe up online. It would probably work out really well. But it's one of the few raisin beers that we make. In fact, it may be the only one that we never really homebrewed. So the issue is how do you caramelize the raisins? But for the most part, using raisins is pretty simple. They just sort of jump in the whirlpool and you get everything you need out of them.
Raisins get a lot of hate. I love raisins. There's been a lot of hate conversation where, like, with raisins, like, it's not, I like raisins.
They're just like old people grapes.
They bite me. I like raisins. I like dried fruit, period.
No, like, not you. Like, I'm not saying, I'm like, grapes look like little old, or raisins look like little old grapes. Like, that's.
Oh, I thought you meant old people. Didn't you say old people food? I'm pretty sure you said old people food.
I said old people grapes. Old grapes.
Tommy, have you ever used fresh melon or anything like that in any of your beers? I can't go through all of these. We just started using cantaloupe in Saison.
Oh, nice.
And it's very, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. And it's Saison finished with Brett. So,
Wow.
Cucumbers and cantaloupe are two things I hate, you know. more than raisins.
More than raisins.
I've not had, that would be more than raisins. Yeah. But listen, you make beer that you love with raisins.
Yeah.
You may be surprised.
We make a lot of them.
We make a lot of them. What about Duck Duck Goose? I would love to hear about that. I love the name, but I would love to hear about the beer.
Well, it happens to be my daughter's favorite beer name that we make, so that's good. We apparently have pandered to children. It's working.
At least he said the favorite name, not the favorite one to drink, people.
Well, children with $40 in their pocket, that's the support. So. Yeah. I don't know. At some point, you know, I love sour beer, and you know, we all pronounce it Goose, which is really a very bastardized sort of pronunciation of it, and it just kind of resonated that at some point Duck Duck Goose made sense to me. You know, Vinny's a really good friend of mine, and he said, "Damn, that's one of the best beer names you'd ever heard," because it's so Americano, and it really is so distinctively different, but evocative of the same, you know, sort of sense that you get from Belgian beer. And we've only done it twice, and it's really been a real labor of love to say, "Look, we want to make the best thing we can do," and I think we've kept it both times, so we're very proud of it.
It is really good. Do you want to talk about, so the brandy barrels, do you use, are you using brandy from a producer in California, the barrels?
No, they're actually come out of Kentucky. They come from the Heaven Hill side.
Oh, really?
So they're not California brandy. They're definitely from that same sort of distillery side.
You know, there's a really good brandy distiller out by you. I can tell you off the air.
Are those barrels like a million years old? Because we just did a brandy show recently, and they talked about really, really, really old barrels.
I can tell you that the quality of the barrels in the 8 years we've been open has definitely changed, although the flavor of the liquid doesn't seem to have changed a whole lot over the time. It's become a little bit more variable. It used to be a little more predictable. We definitely have seen a little bit of variability, but at the same time, I think that we would have stopped using it. We would have stopped using the brandy if we didn't think it was worth using.
Yeah. Well, you mean the quality, just like they're leaking and they're dry, like
the barrels are older. The wood is a little, you know, the wood's a little more suspect. They're drilling holes in the barrels, which makes it harder to use. The easy button kind of went away at about year three. Hmm. And we've been dealing with it ever since, but we still love the flavor, so we're willing to keep working with it.
I really like this beer.
Yeah,
I like
really
this beer
good.
A lot. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah. Well, listen,
that beer ages incredibly well, but it's a booze bomb right now.
Well, especially for 12.5%. I mean, just the finish on it. It's awesome.
Definitely. I'm feeling this one.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's like sip number two, and I was like, oh, wow.
But it's good. It's not that unpleasant boozy. It's really, really subtle.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Listen, Tommy, thank you so much for, did you have a question? You gave me that look. No, no question. Okay. Thank you so much. I just want to make sure. Thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us. And your beers are amazing. Yes. I'm a big fan. I know the guys are as well. And, well, you're one of the guys, aren't you?
Good stuff.
Yes, I am. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again in the future. Hopefully I'll get a chance to try some of the stuff or I'll look for it.
Well, you're still Adam that he owes you. So it's fine.
Well, there you go. Adam, I'm calling you, Adam.
Yes.
But, we'll hopefully get a chance to talk to you again in the future. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, guys. Thanks for the afternoon.
Thanks. Have a great night.
Bye.
You know, and I love that they do address, because I don't think it's a quality issue. I think their stuff is always really good. I think it's just not what people are, like you said, it's like just what people aren't expecting.
Right.
I don't think they would release something that they didn't think was good.
Right.
I just think it's whatever people are anticipating it to taste like. But I like that they address it. You know, it's just work in progress.
His answer was awesome.
Yeah.
A work in progress. That is... You know, every brewer should be willing to say that. You know, We also have to be willing to admit our faults at the same time. But there's a flawed product,
and then there's like you said, like there's something that just goes through, like, you know, as like you progress and you work longer on something. I had even said this to Gagne. When we were talking about his beer, I'm like, you can't help but be a different, better brewer. Even as good as you may think you are today, you can't help, as long if you actually care about what you do, the more time you are working on something and you're educating yourself, you're gonna get better. You can't help, as good as you think you are, you're still not as good as you're gonna be. Right. Hopefully not, because that would really suck.
Right. For sure.
But so to see that. And again, I think that's the beauty with craft, is that what some people may look at as flaws, like he said, year to year, things will change. Well, they're, you know, the barrels change, like the quality of product changes. There are so many with agricultural products. There are so many variables every year. And the more stuff you're adding in, when it isn't just water, yeast, hops, and malt, everything, you know, already those are variables in itself. Right. So yeah, I think, you know, you can forgive them or not, you know, buy the product or not. It is really, really good. And I always say, it's the cheapest crapshoot you're ever going to, on any given day, it's like the least expensive gamble you're ever going to make. And it usually pays off. So
usually
it usually does pay off.
That's an excellent way to put that.
Well, right. I mean, it's a bottle of beer, right? You can either, think about how many things that you have had that you didn't have before that you absolutely love. I mean, I hate when I buy something. The worst is when you only buy that one bottle and you go back and there's no more.
Yeah. I mean, at least it's not like a $1,500 bottle of wine that you just hate the fuck out of. It's going to cost you like $10 tops, maybe 20.
I used to do that all the time. I'd go and pay like $80 for like some Cabernet and it would end up sucking. $80.
Can I say that I've never done that? I've got to say, I've had pretty good luck.
Well, you know,
that was before I was married and I had
you know
money.
What we've done? I would say that because I'm a big Italian wine fan and, you know, we tend to buy wine that's meant to be held for not every, the problem is a lot of people hold on wine, onto wine, like beer, that's not meant to be held it's not cellared properly.
I'm going
to
hold this Sauvignon Blanc.
I saw an example of what happens to, like, my sister got some wine for her wedding. Or was given wine for a wedding and held on to it, and it literally turned into vinegar.
Or sometimes there's no fruit left; it just peaks. And it's the same with beer. I mean, like people that are holding on to stuff, I think it's really important to go. Like, and I would say the Lost Abbey Port Brewing website is really, really great. They have a video for every beer. You know, with their food suggestions. All the guys, you know. Sam. All, you know. By the way, congratulations! I want to hear about that award, Sam and Drew. Are you still there? He's so quiet. If he's there, Drew probably hung up. It's just Sam. Gosh darn it,
Drew.
So Sam, I want to hear about your award. I think that's really exciting. You know, talking about food and beer pairing. I mean, and that's what I want to hear about the award you received last week.
I got a blender
that was really nice.
Yeah, a blender. you can make smoothies.
Yeah.
Jerry and I were selected as, and honestly, it really should have been the collective, all four of my partners and I, but they chose us too.
You're the faces. Everybody knows.
As right. That's what it is. It's because I'm face of the A-team.
It's that beautiful face of the A-team.
I'm the van.
He's a public figure that...
We were selected as rising stars for Star Chef, and from what I didn't know what it was at first, but from what I understand, it's kind of, you know, that...
It's a big deal.
Like winning the...
You wouldn't know. Let me say. You wouldn't know by their shitty website that Star Chef is. No, seriously. I think that's the thing that throws everybody off. They have hands down the shittiest website of any organization.
I should send them an email and be like, "Hey, I can do better."
Sucks.
Oh, totally. So did you bring it up? You're like, "Listen, I do all the media. You guys are killing yourselves."
I told him, I said, I do my homework, and I didn't know what the hell you guys are selling or what. And they were like, just take the award and show up.
We want your opinion, like.
we showed up. It was cool. We won a really cool plate, and this is hilarious. So I'm standing with Jerry at this thing, and I'm like, you know, Jerry, they'll take any sponsor for this kind of bullshit. And he looks at me, he goes, "What are you talking about?" And I go, "They have supplement company." And supplement. He goes, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Vitamix, it's a supplement company, right?" No,
it's a $700 blender.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But no, it was really cool.
A Vitamix.
It's quite an honor. We really enjoyed being recognized for that because we spend so much time.
Well, what was the actual award for? Like, explain like what does the plaque say?
I am awesome.
It says for being a rising star, for being one of the, I guess, for the Kentucky, Tennessee market, we are capable of doing the things that we say we'll do with excellence.
Yay! That's
awesome.
Well, I knew you were a rising star.
Nick Fannyball.
By the way, did you guys meet? Would you say Nick Fannyball?
Nick Fannyball, yeah. It's a beer we made.
Of course. What was I thinking? Did you meet Charlie Nelson from Bell Meat?
Explain. Please explain. Please.
Yes.
I totally did meet him, yes, in front of a fire pit.
Did he tell you that I told him to find you? I'm like,
and I said the same thing to him.
I'm like, find my buddy Sam. He's going to be there. They're the nicest guys. And, you know, they're gearing up their distillery. They've got a really cool story, which maybe you already found out, but really, really nice guys. So I'm glad you got a chance to meet each other.
Yeah. It was really cool. And very nice guy. Very, very nice guy. And I have some news.
I want to hear.
We're looking at a building.
Ooh. Oh, well, you said to me you're going to expand for bottling and canning.
Hell yeah, man.
Drew is here.
It's a great big building there.
What? I'm here. Drew? What? Drew? No.
You just act like you didn't. No. Okay, I see how it is. All right, that's fine.
Secret agent, man.
We were like, Drew. He probably fell asleep.
Stupid him phone in it, so I don't know how to work it. So I had you guys unmute, and I was trying to figure out how to.
So for the last 10 minutes, you've been like, son of a bitch.
They're ignoring me. They're totally ignoring me.
Hey, before I forget, though, Drew, thank you very much for your input on helping me out with the questions I had about brewing my beer. Thank you.
Oh, man, anytime, man. Anytime. No worries, brother. No worries, man.
It was really cool. Thanks, man.
Well, I want to hear, because we already know, we've heard, Drew's already expanding, you know, he's been in business for 10 minutes.
I know.
So I want to hear about the build, because I know you guys were wanting to get a canning line and to start packaging.
Is, so, yeah, it's a 25,000 square foot building.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Wow.
I will, when things are solidified, then I'll post pictures and make it Facebook official.
Facebook official.
But we're looking at a 30 to 50 barrel brew house.
Oh, wow.
90, 92, 100 barrel fermenters. And it would significantly increase our production.
That is awesome. Cool.
Would that mean distribution to
Atlanta? Yes. Well, they're working on distribution to Atlanta already.
Nice.
Good. Hell yeah.
I wanted him to join Brian, who Drew, you know about Brian, I really want him to see you. I've got to be careful, I guess. Like, we can leave this in the show. I'm not going to say his last name.
It doesn't matter.
He's going to be moving down here in like a month. I really want him to come visit you. But when he does get here, and I'll tell you more about him off the air, Sam, a friend of mine who's a brewer, will come visit you. Because I really want him to meet you, but I definitely want him to meet Drew before he leaves Wisconsin. So that's really super. And then also, you're another one. Drew, Zach from... Purple Hearts Reunited is going to get in touch with you. I just gave him your email.
Did he?
Yep, okay, good. And Sam, I was going to talk to you guys about like with the veterans and craft. What are you doing, Dork? You're like dripping.
He just mixed beer with other beer.
What I want to do as part of Veterans and Craft, and whether it's Sam after his expansion or some other people, to see if we can't get other people doing what you're doing, Drew. I like I said, nothing surprises me when you're an incredibly generous person, and that was so. I would say I wasn't surprised. I honestly really expected Drew to say it.
Right.
Not that I, you know, but
I'm just paying it forward, man. Just paying it forward. A lot of people have helped me out and still help me out, and you know, it's. We just kind of take care of people who take care of us. I said that more than once.
I really hope that that's an initiative, just like another thing that we can do with Veterans and Craft, even for like the smaller places that can't really get involved with the program. So what Drew did last week, Sam, that's you because you were getting your plaque, you were getting your award, you weren't able to join. So we had the founder of Purple Hearts Reunited, which is an organization that...
Zach, that
returns purple hearts that were either lost or stolen back to the soldiers that lost them, their families if they're no longer with us, and if they can't find either, is interred the right word? I can't even think. I'm so drunk. I think so. They deliver them to the vocabulary starts to shrink with alcohol. So they will end up putting them in a museum. Yeah. And they have like a, you know, they have a whole service. And so what Steve does is a portion of all the proceeds for Valor, one of the beers that he brews, goes back to the organization. And now Drew has offered to brew them a beer as well, which was incredibly sweet. So that's something else like with Veterans and Craft, hopefully not just for, you know, really as important as an organization like that is. I think there's a ton of vet organizations that I would love to see us, do stuff with, you know, I do think it's really, really important. I think like giving back, people want to continue to do for places that give back. And you guys always have the right idea. I don't really surround myself with people that aren't like that. So I hate to say nothing surprises me. But it always makes me happy when you do. we look forward to that. And it's something that, you know, I'll promote with the show when the show goes up. Well, you guys, as always, are awesome. I love getting a chance to catch up with you. We'll talk to everybody soon, and I can't wait to hear what's going on with 18th Street Brewery and what's going on with Against the Grain. So Sam, you'll start posting all your stuff, but we'll hear about it. I'm super excited.
Hey, it was good to talk to you guys as always. Like, the regulars on the show are always super cool, and it's always enjoyable.
My usual suspects.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Likewise.
Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great night.
You too. Have a good one, guys. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. If you want to find us on Facebook, on undermyhost.com,
on
Instagram,
Twitter.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great night. Burn another bridge, burn another dance. You fucking feel it in your chest. Shit, give this motherfucker, yo, I'm stopping on a fucking lucky old.